The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine this Thursday, the 26th of February. And you're very welcome along to another edition of The Greg Hughes Show here on your number one radio station. It's Highland Radio. Thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully now you're with us for the next couple of hours in this programme throughout the day here on Highland Radio. We've got lots coming up, as you can imagine. We're going to keep you up to date with everything that's important. We're going to platform your views, and we want them into us on 086 60 25000. That's your WhatsApp and your text numbers. Your 07491 25 number gets you 25000 number gets you through to us on the telephone, or you can email comments at highlandradio.com. Let's have a look at some of the papers for this Thursday morning. The Tyrconnell Tribune: one of the board of directors of Swilly Mulroy Credit Union resigned on Monday night, saying the proposed amalgamation with Letterkenny CU should be a decision for the 4,500 membership and not the central bank. And for that reason, he could no longer serve the community in which he resides. Brian McGarvey said his understanding was that the amalgamation decision would give consideration for the members in the common bond area to vote, and the directors would send the result to the central bank. He said this week's decision to recommend the amalgamation to the central bank is wrong because it's a done deal and it excludes the members who are the very foundation and the reason there are credit unions around Ireland. This news was not unexpected. Ever since news of the Swilly Mulroy amalgamation with another credit union emerged at the beginning of the year. An interesting story from John McAteer there, which we might try and tease out further ourselves. The Dairy People Donegal News: the close-knit community of St Johnston gathered in St Bathan's Church last night for a special mass honouring the two teenagers who lost their lives in Tuesday night's fatal collision. Daniel Cullen and Kevin Porter died in the collision involving a car and a lorry on the R236 in the village at around 11:15 p.m. The victims were aged in their late teens, 19 in fact, and understood to be from Derry, and they tragically died in the fatal collision. A third occupant of that vehicle remains in hospital in Belfast. The Derry news this morning: a devastating funding blow means Enoch Youth Forum will be forced to reduce the level of youth service provision across Strathfoyle. It seems almost weekly on the front of the paper, this paper in particular, there's talk of another funding cut to a community service. It almost, as I say, seems weekly. Speaking to the Derry News, Anne Gormley, EYF's chairperson, said the reduction would be effective from April 2026. On Friday, EYF received the very difficult news: our recent funding application to the National Lottery Community Fund's Stronger Futures programme had been unsuccessful. On to the Nationals now, and I wonder if this story affects you, and I'm sorry if it does, the significance of it or not to you. I don't know, but maybe you can give us an understanding. Those who had their childhoods ruined by unforgivable abuse in industrial and reformatory schools have received an unequivocal apology on behalf of the state from Taoiseach Micheál Martin. In the fourth such state apology since 1999 to survivors of abuse in institutions, Martin told four who were sitting in the Dáil chamber, sorry, it must be four people that were sitting in the chamber yesterday, that he was very sorry for what was done to you. I apologise in behalf of the state for the abuse and neglect that you suffered. What happened to you was wrong, shocking, and should never have happened, Martin said. The apology was the direct result of a campaign by four survivors who undertook a 51-day hunger strike outside Leinster House last year. Mary Donovan, Mary Dunleavy Green, Miriam Moriarty Owens and Maurice Patton O'Connell, all survivors of industrial schools, raised concerns about the adequacy of state support for survivors of abuse, which were announced in 2023. So as I say, if that story affects you, do you welcome the apology? Is it too little, too late? Is it enough? I really don't know, but if you can give us an insight and you want to, then please feel free to contact us. Reading in the Irish Independent, and this is accompanying the story of the thousands that protested on the streets right across the country, SNA seeking security for their jobs, parents seeking some certainty as to whether or not They would have an SNA for their children. But anyway, hundreds of children could be denied a school place in a special classrooms from September, as the level of demand has far exceeded expectations. There is concern among some government TDs that this will cause a political controversy that will overshadow recent issues surrounding special needs assistance. The Taoiseach told the Dáil that the number of applications for the September school year was increasing exponentially and is over and above anything contemplated. He said the data available is challenging and would not say if he could guarantee that all children will get a school place as per their constitutional right. He was responding to claims from Labour Education spokesperson Owen Kenny that the high level of applications submitted for the next academic year means an additional 600 special classes will be needed in September again. What is driving this massive demand for special classes? Funding wasn't made available in the budget for an additional 400 special classes, meaning the system is on course to be 200 classrooms short of what's needed. And there are 4 to 6 pupils in each special class, meaning between 800 and 1,000 children could be told they will not get a place. The Department of Education did not confirm the figure of 600 classes being required for next year. On to the Irish Independent and big changes in the rental market, as you might know. The country's largest corporate landlords the country's largest corporate landlord has predicted that its rental income will increase by 25% as a result of new rental laws coming into effect on Sunday. Now, I'm not saying they don't benefit your average renter, you know, rental security, etc. But when you get the biggest corporate landlord saying that their income is going to increase by 25%, it would make you wonder who these rules are actually going to benefit. The sweeping changes will allow landlords to reset rents to market levels between tenancies. In a presentation to potential investors ahead of the changes coming into effect this weekend, CEO of Irish Residential Properties, Eddie Byrne, said the outlook is positive with the new regulations, and predicted rental income will increase by 25%. So this is the biggest corporate landlord in the country telling investors, invest in my company because thanks to these new government rules, our income's going to increase by 25%. Now, make of that what you will. It doesn't feel good, but anyway. The Irish Farmers Journal: anger is rife among export mart managers and farmers over the continued ban on live exports of breeding stock and store cattle to Northern Ireland. The ban, a result of blue tongue movement restrictions, is forcing marts in the west to cancel breeding heifer sales, causing exporters to lose a significant chunk of their weekly business and leaving farmers in Northern Ireland high and dry for stock. Business for Sligo-based exporter Kieran Burke has been significantly disrupted since the cross-border movement restrictions came into play almost 6 weeks ago. Two-thirds of Burke's work is currently at a standstill. He's had to let an employee go and is fielding a number of calls daily from Northern Ireland farmers looking for stock. How long will that run on for, I wonder? And a former US soldier has been charged with the murder of Michael Gaine. Michael Kelly, 54, sat silently as Tralee District Court heard. He is accused of killing the popular Kerry native, 56, at his farm outside Kenmare last year. Kelly was remanded in custody following a four-minute hearing to appear again next Wednesday. The accused had been held and questioned in a series of interviews at a Garda station following his arrest at 7:40 a.m. in Tralee yesterday morning, or Tuesday morning, in fact. Shortly before 3 p.m. on Wednesday, Garda headquarters confirmed that he was to appear before court. As the news emerged, dozens of people gathered around the vicinity of the Tralee courthouse waiting for Kelly's arrival. And he pulled up at 4:26 in a marked Garda van flanked by two unmarked Jeeps and a car. So that is a story that is, of course, of great interest, and it rumbles on. Now, before we go to our first break and then welcome our first guest on the show, I want to let you know that the Donegal Vintage Classic Car and Heritage Club, in conjunction with Bluestack Special Needs Foundation, they're hosting a vintage car show on Sunday, the 8th of March. So that's Sunday week, isn't it? It's at Harold's Yard, Glenfin Road, Ballybuffet. That's about a kilometre past Jackson's Hotel. And it runs from 12 p.m, that's 12 noon, to 5 p.m. So there'll be cars, tractors, static engines, auto jumble and all other classic and vintage machinery. That's going to be welcome as well if you want to turn up with it. A cake sale, tea, coffee, refreshments, crafts and raffles. A fun day out for all the family. So mark that down in your calendar. It is the 8th of March. It's about a kilometre out past Jackson's, out of Ballybuffet, and it's a vintage car show. But it's not just cars, it's all manner of things. And they are hugely popular, A, for people who want to show off their stuff that they've put their pride and time into, but also those who love to just walk around lovely old cars. And I think most of us do enjoy that at some level or other. Just to remind you, you can watch the programme as you can every single day. If you want to watch on YouTube, you go to Highland Radio Ireland. So that means you can watch on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, or across your mobile devices. And we're on Facebook too. Highland Radio has a few Facebook pages, so just search us and you'll see us right there. Okay, now, as you would be aware, we're all still coming to terms with the awful tragedy in the St. Johnston area. Two young men, 19 years of age, very sadly lost their lives. A third remains in hospital. And there's never a good time to talk about road safety, especially in this county, as we've so many instances, it would seem. But we must in this case, because locals in the St. Johnston area have been warning of dangers for quite some time. Donna Marie Reynolds is a concerned member of the St. Johnston community and has had a petition running in relation to safety here. Hi, Donna Marie. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. And first of all, I'd like to express my sympathy and my heart goes out to all the families that are affected by the recent tragedy. I just couldn't believe it when I woke up yesterday morning to hear the news that there'd been another accident on that stretch of road. So first of all, I'd like to just say that and that the community here, such a small community, that we're all devastated in hearing the news. So I started the petition yesterday just to raise concerns again, because I know the community have worked tirelessly before to highlight the dangers of this road. And to my knowledge, there's been at least 7 deaths or more on this stretch of road over the years, Greg. So there's been numerous incidences that have occurred, and a lot of them as well haven't been reported because the wall has been rebuilt several times and edges, and pedestrians have lost their lives as well. So, it's just there's been repeated accidents and it's not an isolated issue. So I really just feel that something needs to be done, and hopefully decision makers, if anyone's listening, that they will address the issues and, put in some traffic calming measures, speed ramps, improve the signage and widen those dangerous bends on the road, especially there just before Larkins on the bend of the road there. There's been just numerous occasions of incidences, and also just about 100 metres away on the turn there before Buncrana and Newton Cunningham, there's been a fatality there as well, only just a few years ago. So, it would be great if people, just to encourage people to sign the petition, and hopefully decision makers will listen and something will be done about it.
Obviously, the investigative process in relation to the latest collision is ongoing. Garda Forensics will have to determine what mm-hmm. caused it. There are a number of factors that can be contributing factors to a road traffic collision. So we can't really talk of the most recent mm-hmm. incident. But why is this particular road, what is it about it that lends itself to this dangerous reputation, Donna Marie?
Yeah, well, there's numerous sharp bends on the road, and especially near Larkins there, there's one area that's quite tight, and we get a lot of lorries on the road, and even myself on that part of the road, I have tipped off, at the side there, because there's a footpath there too, which is extremely dangerous, to be honest with you, there too, and it's just really dangerous. There's a few areas there now where cars have gone in. And I'd say I was talking to locals there, and at least a dozen accidents a year happen there, incidents happen a year there, and not all of them are reported, you know. So they're not, you know, the people are okay, they get their cars fixed or whatever, and the wall gets rebuilt. But yeah, so there's a few areas there, and especially there's hedges as well that probably would need to be removed as well in some areas as well, especially that turn to Newton Cunningham and Buncrana. It's a very dangerous turn there. And even further up as well, there's an area with trees and a house there where cars have got into the wall several times on the bend towards St Johnson there as well. So there's actually a few parts of the road there that really need to be looked at and are very dangerous. And it's really dangerous for people because there's very few places to walk as well. And there's a stretch of footpath there that people walk past the church and that past, you know, the rectory there on the main road before the garage. And it's very dangerous. It's really not a safe footpath, you know, okay, for people to be walking on as well.
Where is
the
petition done?
Yeah.
Where's the petition available?
So it's on change.org and it is, it's on change.org and it's install ramps and signage on R236. Mm. I've just sent it there to Highland Radio
so
people could link on it and click and sign it. That would be great. So I really just felt that something needed to be done. As I said, there has been Mary Cross and the Management Board and the Resource Centre have done tireless work in the past to highlight the issue. And they were told that a pedestrian crossing and traffic lights would be installed at the end of the town there in St Johnson. But unfortunately, it never came to fruition. Mm. And, you know, feel sometimes these towns are forgotten about.
Well, of course,
you know?
but we've discussed this particular issue on this programme on numerous occasions, and it's not exclusive to the St Johnston area. There are a number of hotspots, and there's always need for surveys. The TII might be involved. It's over here, it's over there. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, nothing gets done. All right, Donna Marie Reynolds, thank you. Donna Marie rightly pointing out that this has been on the agenda for quite some time. Alec, I know you've certainly been aware of the dangers and trying to get them addressed for a long time now.
Yes, I agree 100% with Donna. The Caring St Johnston Research Centre has been petitioning the council for 10 years, over 10 years, to get something done with that corner. That wall has been knocked down 3 times in 1 year. Now, you're approaching that bend. You have a curb there. Especially Lloyd's. The bend's too sharp. The Lloyd's has to go up on the footpath to get round that corner. If they don't, they're on the wrong side of the road. If a car's coming down there speeding, if the back wheel hits that curb, it turns around, straight onto the wall, or if there's a car coming, it's a head-on smash. Now, I'm very angry because I've been listening to people come out and say, this is a tragedy, this never should have happened. For 10 years, more than 10 years, we were steady at the council to get something done with it. So it didn't come as a surprise. Unfortunately for the people that were killed, I'm sorry, and I feel sad for the parents. Mm-hmm. But this was going to happen.
You know, when we talk about other really bad stretches of roads, you know, like say for instance the A5, and we all know how dangerous that is, and it is a massive project to increase safety on that road. You know, hundreds of millions and years and the thing about St Johnston and other towns where people have similar concerns, we're actually really talking more about a will and the desire to do it, because the money involved is chicken feed really compared to some of the safety works we talk about. It would not have taken an awful lot, Alex, to sort of implement some of these safety measures that locals have been calling for.
No, and it would not. The fact, the only time you see councillors as come up to elections. Now, I don't know what they're doing up in Lufford. Now, they've been told about this numerous times and nothing's been done about it. And that's sad when somebody loses their life.
I will say, just in relation to the councillors, they can make representatives, but these are executive decisions. Sometimes it's the responsibility of the council executive, the roads office. Sometimes it's the responsibility of the TII. A councillor really, in this instance, can only do what you're doing, Alec, and say, can you look at this? Can you do this? They don't really have the powers to make it happen. But I understand your frustration as well.
They're closer than what I am to the council.
That's true. I will accept that. That is true. Okay, Alec, thank you for your time. Raymond McDade is a garage provider in St Johnston. Raymond, thanks for chatting to me. I do appreciate it. I wish it was under any other circumstances. Your business very close to the scene of many of these collisions that have been witnessed in the area.
Yes, Greg, how are you doing? We're only about 75 metres away from the accidents which happen regular up there, Gregory,
So, in other words, you know, even ones that we don't hear about but aren't reported, you would probably get the call out to go in and move a yoke or pull it out of the ditch or whatever it might be.
Usually what happens, Greg, when they go around that corner there, there's a high curb, they clip the curb, they either hit the church wall or they go into the hedge on the far side. Luckily, you know, maybe this, we'd be up there maybe 15, 16, 18 times a year with a fork truck, lift a car out of the ditch or lift it out of the wall, you know.
And that is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But the guards aren't always on scene because they're not always required to be on scene. So we don't really have a full sense of the... We're getting more of an insight into how dangerous that is from you than we might from the guards, put it like that.
Yeah. No, hey, it's a regular occurrence, and it would be very simplified, you know, to be very simple sorted. You know, it's either take a bit of the ditch, a fire ditch away, for when a lorry comes round there and it meets a car, you know, so the lorry's holding in and the car pulls in and it clips the curb, and that's what happens, then the car slides down the road. Now, this fatal accident has happened, you know, which is probably going to highlight the thing now. But it shouldn't have went to this stage. It should have been sorted. I'm here 55 years in business, and, you know, I end up with the cars in the yard here, or they take the cars and get them fixed. But this is a regular occurrence, and I haven't seen any councillors or anybody else come into this yard to me to say, Raymond, what could we do about this, or what should be done about this? You know, and I would be speaking to guards regularly as well. Sometimes when we left the guards might be there, you know.
Yeah.
But there is still nothing being done, and would be very simple. It would be very simple sorted. It wouldn't take a real big money cost to do it.
What needs doing for a man who's been there all his life and in business all his life and have chatting, you know, 12 to 18 times a year you're going on site here. What's actually happening? Is it that the traffic is too quick and it clips that curb, or is the curb too pronounced? Or what needs, in your expert opinion, and I'm going to call it an expert opinion, what needs doing, Raymond?
Well, it's really not speed all the time. It's just probably maybe careless driving, maybe, or, you know, they just come into the corner maybe 30, 40 miles an hour, Greg. Mm. The road could be wet. And they clip the curb, and the car just spins around when they clip the curb. That's really... That's exactly what happens all the time. And, you know, they need to take a wee bit off the other side of the road, you know, to give lorries, meeting cars, give them a bit of room, and give the cars a bit of room when they're meeting one another. And it's not really speed, because there's a ramp further up the road there, maybe 150 metres, which slows the traffic coming into the town, you know.
Right. This is a busy stretch.
On the other side of the Kerrigan.
Right, this is a busy stretch too. It's not just local traffic. People travelling from Strabane to Derry or vice versa might use this road too, right?
Well, that's what's happening. The Derry, Strabane, people will be using this road regular, because the road over on the far side there, going into Derry, you know, via New Buildings there, it's very busy in the mornings there. So this road will be very busy in the mornings and the evenings.
Okay.
And especially, you know, they need to do something with the traffic coming in via Carrigan's and St Johnston, because, you know, if you're coming out of the shop there, you know, coming across the road there, both the cars falling out there, you know, you know, you have the car out, the next thing this car's coming speeding up from the Carrigans there and go through St. Johnston, you know, so need a couple of ramps would sort the thing out on it in the meantime, but that could still save lives.
Yeah, and we see ramps elsewhere, why not here? That's what I don't...
Well, we're the forgotten town here, Greg, you know, we seem to be bypassed by councillors and everybody else, you know.
Yeah,
I hear them on the radio there all the time, to you there, but you know, the places needs money spent, and towns need, and villages needs money spent. But this is definitely a safety thing would need to be sorted.
Yeah, and I heard the same from Alec as well too. You know, that is a sense in the area, definitely from both you and he, and both of you have been around for a long time, and both of you very interested in safety in the area too. So I trust what you're saying. Raymond, just say that one more time, just to be clear. In relation to this curb, this corner, you've got the garage there 75 metres out of the way. You're on scene at least once a month anyway.
At least once a month, Greg, at least. And, you know, to be fair, this is the most fatal accident I have seen here. I've seen accidents maybe with the going ambulances, but this is the most fatal one. And, you know, these people were just very, very, you know, it's a second might have made a difference, or 2 seconds, but that wasn't the case.
Okay. Raymond, thank you for your time. That's Raymond McDade, the garage owner there in St. Johnston. And thanks to Alec and Donna Marie as well. A caller says another very dangerous spot is driving in past the Aura from Glen Swilly side. The pavement is so narrow. I was driving in last week and there was a lady walking on the pavement swinging her arms. I actually had to stop as I was meeting a car, and if I had driven on, I would have hit her arm. The road is just not wide enough for two cars. She was happy as Larry with earphones in and totally oblivious to the fact that her swinging arms was directly in front of oncoming cars. I'm not saying it's the case in the stretch of road that you're talking of, but certainly the way, one of the ways to slow down traffic is narrow roads. So as I say, sometimes it's by accident, sometimes it is by design. Maybe they might argue that you having to slow down like that, is the road functioning as it should? I don't know. If you've any more comments from the St. Johnston area, please get in touch with us, or any area from that, for that matter. Good morning, Greg, says the listener. Huge thanks to Jamie for telling his story to help others. He's a rock star patient ambassador, and we are so lucky to have him in our community. Carmel Doyle, CEO of the OCF, he had esophagus cancer, effectively, just a young lad in his early 30s, and was speaking on the show yesterday. And that's where the podcast comes in handy. I know you can't listen every day, but the podcast has been made really easy for you to listen to. It's on our website, highlandradio.com. And it's also on Spotify and iTunes. And you can just get the full episode in one episode. There's not parts. It's there for you. And we have a sister podcast as well. It's the Greg Hughes podcast. And we've got 8 or 9 episodes up there right now. A little later on, if we have time, we're going to play you a clip from one of our latest uploads. We haven't got it up yet, but we will later today. And it's in relation to eating disorders. And I'm speaking to a young man again, Connor. And you don't know necessarily, and this is wrong, but you don't necessarily associate eating disorders with young people, young men, really, I don't think. In a lot of people's minds, either might think it's more likely to affect females. But his is a very interesting story as well, especially if you've got young fellas in the house who are body conscious, or you're slightly concerned at how body conscious they are. Because Connor's eating disorder was triggered by being very athletic and being involved in sports and what have you. So I'll play a clip of that later if we have time, and the podcast will be available. It's a midweek bonus podcast, I think. I'll just get the okay from Caroline on that, which will be released today, I think, or tomorrow. But I'll let you know. I will let you know. Morning, Greg. What's the point in having county councillors getting big wages if they can't help the people? Two lives lost, and now you'll hear the councillors on talking about how terrible it is. I think it's very important that we focus our... I don't want to sound preachy. It's up to you what way you want to think. But we have to understand the role of a councillor and what influence they have. They're not on big money either. They're not on insignificant money, but they can advocate. But there's certainly a sense in St. Johnston that maybe enough advocation... there was enough advocacy, and maybe councillors, local councillors might argue that, but we have to put the blame where the blame is as well. I think that's really important, because then we might get some results. A caller believes a lot of roads are not fit for heavy trucks and lorries using them. Why do they have to use minor roads? Another, every year the media and politicians in Donegal applaud the Donegal rally. They never acknowledge the influence the rally has on young people's driving. Young people see rally drivers training on public roads and the guards doing nothing. So it's no wonder young people drive so fast and so many lives are lost in Donegal. The rally is a lot to answer for, but no media will acknowledge this for fear of the rally organisers. Well, I'm not in fear of anyone. I'll be honest with you. The rally is the rally. The rally is run in an incredibly safe way. I don't know if testing's done on roads when it shouldn't be done. I think we don't want to confuse the rally, which is an organised sporting event, with what can go on in and around the rally that's outside the rally organiser's responsibility. And sometimes you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's not the rally's organiser's fault that there are people that come to the region and act like they do. That's law enforcement's responsibility, I would argue. Elaine Rooney is support manager, North and Central Donegal, with Family Carers Ireland, and is with me on the programme now. Good morning to you. How are you keeping, Elaine?
Morning, Greg. How are you? I'm very well.
Right. Now, Family Carer Support Groups meeting is taking place in Donegal. Before we get to that, what is the function of your organisation? You know, you talk about support manager. It might be interesting to get a sense of that.
Yeah. So Family Carers Ireland is the largest charity organisation working for family carers. Currently, we're supporting over 500,000 carers in Ireland. And we do a lot of work kind of around advocacy and just supports. We set up kind of groups where carers can come together. And we also have a lot of things in the background going on that carers can avail of if they reach out for support. So
there's all types of ways people can reach out for support. But are there a couple of obvious ones that come up time and again that keep your offices occupied?
Yeah, so I suppose there'd be a lot going on around rights and entitlements and appeals and kind of what's going on around that sort of stuff, you know. Sometimes carers kind of have a difficult time, you know, trying to get, you know, to know the lay of the land with their rights and entitlements. So we have a lot of workshops and stuff that kind of support them in that. And we do a lot of clinics kind of around that where people can come in one-on-one and can have a chat around kind of like what's happening for them and how we can help them. So sometimes it can be on the ground one-on-one support, and sometimes it can be signposting to other services that are able to support them.
Yeah, and I suppose we had this sort of carrot dangled of and this political conversation about you know means testing of carers and what have you. That seems to have gone by the wayside now. We're not hearing much of that anymore.
Well, I wouldn't say it's gone by the wayside. The government have made a commitment that they are going to abolish that means test.
When's that going to happen, do they say?
2029. So it is happening on a phased basis. It is actually happening. They have rose the means test this year. It's going up. So, yeah, there is a lot of stuff going on in the background. And it's kind of not really possible to do these things in one big bang because it just isn't, it just isn't feasible. But they are phasing it out. It is something that they are working on. And Family Carers Ireland have been heavily involved in kind of supporting that and getting that off the ground. So, yeah, there has been a lot of work going on kind of around that sort of stuff.
In terms of carers' rights and entitlements, which is another area of focus where you offer support and information, are there obvious ones that people may not be aware that they are entitled to or that sort of apply to them?
There probably is, Greg. That's a really hard question to answer because every care is different and the situation they're coming with is different, you know. I suppose when you're talking about that, I suppose that leads me into that some stuff that I'm doing specifically in Donegal on the ground where carers could come along and find out stuff like that. So currently I have a support group that's running in South Donegal. So I do that on the last Wednesday of every month. So it was on yesterday and it's going to be on again on the 25th of March. And it's in the Ballyshannon Library from 11:30 to 1:00. So in that in that group, really, it's a support group. So it's carers coming along and they can, you know, talk and listen to each other, and it, there's a supportiveness to it. But there's also a little bit of time usually given at those, because I attend them all, where if there is something concerning, you know, we can have a chat about it. And if it's a case where it's something where I can signpost them or support them there and then, I will.
I can understand why it's so difficult, because there's so many variables, isn't there? Family situations, different people with different incomes.
Absolutely,
in the property. Yeah, so I do understand that you can't sort of, there's no blanket response to that.
Yeah,
and that's why the one-on-one clinics are so invaluable. So yesterday was the clinic in Ballyshannon, and that's every month, you say. But also the one-on-one clinics in Boncrana, Letterkenny and Bundoran over the coming months. When you say one-on-one, do people have to book? Are they groups or are they different setups?
Ideally, because I want to be able to give the people the time, you know, where they can have a slot. So ideally, I would like people to reach out and book with it. Like, obviously I'm going to be there, and if they come along, but there is the risk then that they might have to wait or reschedule. So ideally, if they could reach out to me and book, I can give them a time slot, and it just gives them that one-on-one space where they know, okay, I have this hour with the support manager where we can discuss what's going on for me face to face. So yeah, I suppose they're running in Bundoran Library on the 6th of March. I have one coming up next week. There's one in Buncrana then in April, on the 17th of April. In Letterkenny Library, we're doing one on the 1st of May. And the Bundoran Library again then the 8th of June. And I'm going to consistently roll them out all year. So
there's an event too, actually, in Dunloe Library as well, coming up towards the end of March. Is that correct? The support group meeting in Dunloe Library on the last Thursday of every month, beginning on the 26th of March, no?
No, that's not in the Dunloe Library. No,
okay,
so on the,
right, sorry, that's so, just information they've been given there.
So we've two new support groups that are starting, which are very exciting for the people of Donegal, and I've had great feedback of people wanting to attend. One is going to be in Dunloe, and it's starting on the 26th of March.
Okay, that's
In the CDP Rossin Centre, and it's going to be on from 10:30 to 12:30 on the last Thursday of every month. And so that's really exciting in Dunloe, because we hadn't been up there for a while.
And Rafoe as well.
And then in Rafoe, in the Family Resource Centre, on the 2nd of April, we're running support groups there from 10:30 to 12:30. And they are also going to be every month. So they'll be running on the first Thursday of every month. So there's lots going on. And if people want to find out more, and because I know that I'm after giving an awful lot of information there, we are running an information session which people could log on to, and that will literally give a really good intensive rundown of what Family Carers is all about. And that's actually next Thursday, and it's online from 10:30 to 12:30. And on that day, people can hear all about the organisation, what we do, what we can do, and they can ask us questions on the day as well. And there's very much like a lot of detail of what's going on in the county at that. So if they want to go to that, they can reach out to me by emailing me at erooney@familycarers.ie, and I will send them the link to that. And it would be great to see as many family carers jumping on that, so we could kind of spread the word on the day.
Yeah, so just to be clear from my perspective, because I was kind of mixing up support groups and one-on-ones, there is a series of one-on-ones: Bundoran Library, the 6th of March, Buncrana Library, the 17th of April, Letterkenny Library, the 1st of May, Bundoran Library, 8th of June. And in terms of two new groups starting, the first in Dunloe on the 26th of March, and then the second in Rafoe on the 2nd of April. And there's obviously ones down in the south of the county, Ballyshannon Library, that was yesterday, and then there's another one in the month. So there's a ton of stuff there. There's options to meet with other people in this caring space, support each other, converse, but there's also one-on-one opportunities, because obviously it's such a, sometimes the inquiries can be so specific that might be useful. So if anyone wants any details on anything we've talked about there, including the online event that you talked of, is there one singular go-to place?
Yeah, so they can look on the website, www.familycares.ie, and there is a fountain of information on there. We have got a calendar of events that they can look at, and they'll see exactly what's coming up around the county and the country. There is a lot of online workshops that carers can avail of, and there's different groups and things that they can do from the comfort of their own home online, which is really nice, because when you're caring, sometimes it can be isolating.
So well, the irony too is you can't get respite to attend out of house stuff.
This is the difficulty, Okay. So, so it is. There's a lot of online supports there running, so it's really good.
Elaine, go ahead. Yeah,
you want to say one last thing? Yeah, they can always reach out to me, like I said, on my email address at erooney@familycares.ie. I'm always delighted to hear from people, and I can follow up on that anytime they reach out. So, thank you so much, Greg, for your time.
Look after yourself. Thanks so much indeed for joining us. So, caller says, as tragic as recent events are, things need to be clarified. How many collision incidents have happened? Over what period? Who designated this road, and why has nothing been done about the black spot? Facts and stats speak volumes. Well, we heard from Raymond, who lives literally there, has his business there. He's talking 12 to 18 instances a year, and they obviously are going to vary in severity. What a really foolish thing to blame the rally. We seem to live in a world where you do not take responsibility, always blame someone or something else. Yeah, and I think I addressed that as well. And I do understand how sometimes we can sort of knee-jerk to the default. But, you know, there's lots of variables that would point to the fact that that's not really an influence. And as I said before, we really do really need to separate out a very professional, safe event that is run and of great benefit to the county, and a culture and members of that culture, that sort of rally culture that can arrive and don't even attend the rally, but it's got nothing to do with the rally. So I think it's important just we separate those things out. Greg, why don't you find out for certainty who has responsibility for making the bend at St Johnston safer? You're saying that it might be local councillors, or it might be the TIA or something else. This is the exact type of ambiguity which lets organisations off the hook. The responsibility has to be left at some officer's door. Let those with responsibility to step forward and expose them. Well, sorry, I beg your pardon. Sometimes I presume you would know. That's information that we clarify off air. And we contact the various agencies in responsible to that. It's a council regional road, and it is under the auspices of the council. And we have reached out to the council for a response. But what I'm saying to you is, when you start talking about, and I was speaking more generally and not specifically about any particular section, when we start talking about road safety, like Duncan Ely, for an example, then it starts getting chucked around from one department or another. I live in the village and heard the emergency services, but it's such a regular thing now. The wall around the cemetery is constantly knocked down and being rebuilt. The footpath in the area is so unsafe to use that the public won't use it. Traffic calming is absolutely needed. And that is the overriding message we're getting from listeners today in that area. So many councillors, engineers and Gardaí travel these roads. Does none of them ever think something needs to be done here? Another, sure, they are making and doing big wide footpaths now. What could drive a car on some of them? It's narrowing the roads and making it more dangerous. But again, and I'm not speaking to any specific area, well, Capria can, for an example, or even the four lanes in Letterkenny. The major roadworks there were designed to narrow the road to slow vehicles down, is my understanding. Just listening to you mention how much rents may increase very soon, and I honestly don't know how students, young teachers and young nurses will survive in Dublin and Galway. In fact, it will affect young people all over the country. This will lead to more emigration and probably mental health issues. There's more reasons now than ever for people to be chucked out of their homes, their homes, I call it their homes, but you know, their rental properties or the properties that they are renting. Hardship, you know, landlords in hardship. You know, it's pretty easy to demonstrate if you wanted to. Regarding the changes on long-term rental, this will drive up rental prices. New contracts of a minimum term of 6 years. I think it's 2% it can go up per year. But anyway, new contracts of a minimum term of 6 years, driving landlords to sell. Small landlords are being persecuted by the government, charging them 50% tax on rental income. And then they take the majority of rights over their properties and give it to the tenants. Again, the decision makers have got it so wrong, they'll not help the long-term rental market, only have a major detrimental effect. But my understanding is you can increase 2% per year, and then after 6 years, you can reset it to full market value. So It's still an attractive proposition, but if you're paying half of that in rent, you're obviously in the high income bracket. And, you know, rental isn't about paying your mortgage either. You know, you're still getting a decent income, are you? I don't know. Let me know. 086 60 25,000.
Where your opinion matters. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hi, Greg. I drive for a living covering all of Donegal, says the listener. The amount of people on the phone is a pandemic. Every third or fourth car or lorry or bus driver, men and women, all ages. Not one thing is done about this, but if you're 3 kilometres an hour over the limit, you'll get 3 penalty points in the post. And as for lights, most people drive early in the morning or at dusk with the small side lights on, thinking that this is enough. They need dipped headlights on at least at all times. That comes in from Gene in his own. Thank you for that. The thing about the lights, a lot of the cars too have daytime driving lights, and I know someone really quite close to me who doesn't use them, even though they're there and they'll come on automatically. I want to go now to James Fleming, Treasurer of St. Johnson Presbyterian Church. James, thank you for joining me this morning.
No problem, Greg. It's good to be on. Thank you.
Yeah, and indeed,
it's a sad affair.
And as I said in the first hour, James, there never feels a right time to talk about this, but there is so much feeling in the St. Johnson area that, you know, there's dangers here that need to be addressed. And you feel strongly about this too, don't you?
Well, yes, it has been. And I was listening to Raymond McNeil there earlier on. He's perfectly correct. But everything he said was 100%. It's been 50 years since the original bend was to be straightened out. And, well, we all know 50 years ago, things in Donegal are, the planning systems in Donegal are a lot different today, but things didn't happen in St. Johnston. That bend was to be straightened out. I know because we sold land because of it, on a just further on up. But anyway, that's beside the point now. The bend is there. The church owns that wall that has been rebuilt in its entirety 3 times in the last 9 years. It's been built, it's been fixed a few times since that as well. And it was unfortunate this car clipped the curb, which was fixed about 10 years ago, and the council did a good job, but unfortunately it raised the curb so that the tires do touch, and then the car then can either hit our wall. Sometimes it stops and goes through the wall, which is unfortunate for them, but on this occasion it seems to have pushed the car into the oncoming traffic,
James.
But it has been.
You have, as a community, have been fearing something like this. In other words, when you get collisions of a certain seriousness on so many different occasions, inevitably your mind will turn to it's only a matter of time until we're talking about something way more serious, and unfortunately, that appears to have happened. But the original part of that question, James, is you were expecting this, as tragic as it is. It was inevitable.
Oh, yes. It was brought home during COVID. And both my wife and I walked that road on a continual basis because it's only a kilometre from our house. So we walked down there and we stopped doing it. It was just so dangerous. We were afraid that we would get in between a car and the wall. Mm. And even the church, and the wall has been there since 1824. And we used to use, that was our main entrance, that particular wall was our main entrance. Mm. And that was stopped many years ago because it was just so dangerous. We also moved the entrance to the minister's house about 40 years ago. It has moved 100 metres down towards the town itself because it was proven to be Russian roulette for the minister or any guests going into that, into either of the entrances. Mm. We stopped using the main entrance for the church, and we had to move the entrance for the minister's house 100 metres. Oh, that's 40 years ago. The sign then was... the sign for the church itself was on that corner. And the committee, in their day, which is about 30 to 40 years ago, we even felt then that any distraction at all for a driver should be taken out. And we moved the sign and moved it back in towards the church building itself, mm-hmm. so it wouldn't be a distraction. Now, we own the field on the other side as well as the... And we are continually fixing it. Now, some very decent people have come and give us a subscription to fixing the wall and the hedges, so it's not completely on our out of our account, but it's still far too dangerous. The council have done, and the people that look after the roads, who are very good, they put up signs. They do everything that they can, except, and Raymond is quite correct, two ramps on either side of it would be that's all it'll take. Mm-hmm. Whether they widen the road or not, that's for another day's work. But the two ramps on either side of it, either 50 or 100 metres, or somebody smarter than us will be able to tell us that we have plenty of ramps in St. Johnson. Some of them in the wrong place. Some of them are serving no purpose, but they're there. They're in Carrigans. They're in Newton Cunningham. And I go through Newton Cunningham regularly, and you will not, there is no speeding going through that town. Go through Carrigans, you know that you're going to make that ramp at the Garda barracks. So it is such a simple solution, and has been forwarded to councillors, who I do not blame, because I know, and you're quite correct, the councillors are only there to provide a service, but the road service, and it's many years, and I heard Mary Crossan saying about the traffic lights and the ramps were to be there many years ago, mm-hmm. but maybe we're not in the centre of the universe, but we still feel that we have an obligation to the community and to people that don't know the road.
On a morning like this, does the community feel let down, James? Is that the emotion?
Well, we've just felt forgotten. We don't, they do come and they fix the potholes and they do this, that, and the other. And it's but this is a serious piece of speed, and it's only speed. That's all. It's nothing else. That's you feel really. I mean, we're talking about 80. It's supposed to be a 50 kilometres an hour. I'm scared to think what speed they go past there. I'm old enough now to remember, and we all know how young people act. I was once, your reputation goes before you, but you do slow down. But at the same time, that is a very serious piece of road, and it would be, in my humble opinion, two ramps on either side would slow it down so much that it would save those lives. And I really feel for those people, those three families that are suffering here now at the moment.
And James, and I hope you understand, I will say, there's never a good time to talk about road safety, but this has been on the agenda locally for so long, we can't ignore it. And it's not to be in any way insensitive. But I also want to say is there is an ongoing investigation as to what may have caused this collision or may have contributed to it. And much of our conversation is about what we've known from the past. And of course, we'll let that investigation play out its course. But we cannot ignore local voices, local people who know exactly what's going on. And that sense that we've been telling you about this corner, we want ramps, and we feel forgotten. And that's what's so important about today, to have that conversation too.
Yeah. Yep, we it's the experience of Newton Cunningham, even the one in Carrigans, and the ramps we all know where they're Calais. we might curse them because they're quite
well,
sharp.
Can I say in relation to that? They
slow us all down.
There was a ramp put in Downing's just at the entrance to the beach car park. Theoretically, if there was a vote, would I have voted for it to be put in there? Because I use that road quite a bit. No. In retrospect, can I see how it works? Of course, because everybody has to slow down to a crawl at a very busy junction where families are crossing and walking and pulling in and out. So, as you're quite right, James, they're not necessarily popular, but they're very, very effective. And, you know, sometimes safety has to trump convenience.
Absolutely. There's no question about this. I remember not that long ago, there was a lady, a neighbour of mine, that had parked on the other side of the town. She was in the shop getting something, and she had to cross the road. And a couple of us had to go out and stop the traffic because we had to be careful to let her get across to get to her car. And that was you really don't know until you see the speed that why there isn't more accidents. And I know because I'm a neighbour of Raymond's, and I see his forklift going up to, and we own the ground. And the cars even ended up in a chap's garden recently, went through the field entrance and into his garden. Now, he's only building the house at the moment, but it's I'll not say it's not a comedy at all.
No, but I mean, of course, I know what you're saying. And he's thinking, like, unless something's done, is this going to be in my, you know, can I actually use that garden safely? No, I get exactly where you're coming from, James. Thanks for so clearly and eloquently explaining the situation to us, James. And I'm expressing that too to our other guests a little earlier on. You know, you know what's clear is, you know what the problem is. You've talked about it. We've talked about it on this show. And it's the signs have been there for generations, literally generations. And something, it seems, needs to be done. Now, James Fleming, thank you for your time. He's treasurer of St. Johnstone Presbyterian Church. So we've two episodes of the Greg Hughes podcast going live on our website, Spotify and iTunes this week. We've got one going up this evening and one tomorrow. The tomorrow one's really interesting. They're both actually really interesting, but you might remember the 90s band D-Ream. Well, the lead singer of that band, originally from Derry, but now living in Farn, he's got a really interesting story, not about his career just, but also about how he made contact with his maternal parents, because he was born in a mother and baby's home, and he's celebrating his 60th birthday soon. A very proud Derry man, and Derry's very proud of him. So we had a really good chat. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all our chats because they're different types of conversations. But Peter Connor is our guest on Friday's edition of the Greg Hughes podcast. Now, we have a bonus podcast going up today, and it's on the very serious issue of eating disorders, because they, of course, are a serious health condition that affect a person's body and their mind. They can cause upsetting thoughts and feelings about a person's body, food and weight. And the main types are anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder and other specified feeding or eating disorder. That's kind of a umbrella conversation. And often there is this perception when we talk of eating disorders that it's anorexia or bulimia and that it might affect women. That's not the case. I'm just trying to break down some stereotypes here. So last evening, I had a chat with Connor Nolan, who's eating disorder awareness campaigner, mental health speaker and author of Normal Speak to Me. And I might reiterate a bit of that into the introduction of this week's conversation. OK, good morning, Connor Nolan, eating disorder awareness campaigner, mental health speaker and author of Normal. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thanks a million.
Do you think, to some extent, we're breaking a notion listeners might have talking about eating disorders, talking to a male?
100%, yeah, because I suppose one thing is very important to know. Like eating disorders are more common in females. There's no doubt about that. But they're definitely more common. They're definitely more common in males than people realise. I think roughly, like in the case of, let's say, anorexia, you know, one in four cases occur in a male. And then with something like, let's say, binge eating disorder, it occurs in males and females 50-50. So absolutely, there's definitely the frequency of occurrence in males versus the perceived occurrence is definitely very different. So yeah, and I think we're we're getting there in terms of educating people and as you say, yeah, breaking the mold there and changing that perception.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, fellas, if I could put it like that, they might associate it with something else or say something else because they don't feel this is something that could affect a boy, or this is something I could speak about or get help about, and it could manifest itself in different ways. That's why it's important to talk, isn't it?
100%. Yeah. The problem there, you know, like if someone is in the frame of mind that, oh, this couldn't possibly happen to me, well, then they're not going to look out for certain warning signs, or even worse so, if the warning signs do come along, they will ignore them and think, oh, well, no, this must be something different, or this mustn't be too serious at all. So yeah, definitely understanding that it can, as we often say, you know, eating disorders don't discriminate. They can affect anyone, any gender, any age or any stage in life. Very, very much so. Yes.
The age 11, 12, very important to you as part of, you know, this story of yours, this experience of yours. When do you believe, you know, this actually began?
So that's a great question. I would have, I suppose in my case, you know, I would have been diagnosed when I was 12, you know, turning 13. But like, you know, at that stage, it's very much, it's in full flow. You know, in my case with anorexia involves a lot of weight loss. Again, every eating disorder, there are multiple eating disorders and each one's of different characteristics. But, you know, by the time I was diagnosed, I had lost an awful lot of weight. The behaviours that led to that weight loss were in place long before that. And then even before the anorexic tendencies really began to kick in, there was little sort of things that I can see in hindsight that were very much leading towards the eating disorder. So I would say, you know, maybe from the age of 10 onwards, the cogs were starting to move. The way I look at it is I was a very keen young athlete. I was a very, you know, keen footballer and all that kind of stuff. And I would have trained hard for the purpose of, you know, getting better on the pitch. And then slowly but surely, the focus started to move away from the on-pitch performance and more towards things like, you know, the weighing scales and the food and looking in the mirror and so on. So I'd say going back as far as maybe the age of 10, things were starting to go on the turn a bit, 100%.
So then the sport and activity we're involved in, would this have manifested itself if you hadn't been involved in sport, or are you of the view that it would have found its way to the surface one way or other?
Well, it's a great question. And I suppose one thing, a lot of, you know, in a lot of cases, people who develop an eating disorder, you know, may be athletes. And, you know, with some eating disorders, there is that element that over-exercise or exercising quite strenuously is one of the components. Now, one thing that's interesting, like, especially given the age that I developed this at, a very common thing with an eating disorder is that a period of change can very much cause havoc. So, you know, at the age of 11, 12, 13, you have that that transition from primary into secondary school. And that can very much like trigger an eating disorder into full bloom, because there's a huge element with an eating disorder of control. And when there's a feeling of a loss of control in someone's life, they can sort of try and refine this control with their food and with their exercise as kind of a coping mechanism. The question of whether it would have happened, excuse me, if I hadn't been playing a sport is a good question. Personally, I think, you know, if it was going to play out, it probably would have found a way to do so. The way I look at it is, because I had a love for sport and a love for training and that kind of stuff, the eating disorder had something to take, and then I suppose you can already say in some cases kind of like turn against me. But, you know, definitely there are cases where people develop an eating disorder, you know, and they mightn't be athletes at all. So I'm not exactly sure. I think it might have played out regardless. I think so.
So if you could just maybe help us, if you can, to get inside the mind of 11, 12, 13-year-old. So if you're very active, you know, the perception would be from others that you're in good shape, right? That you're toned or you're lean or your body mass index is low. You obviously don't feel that way in yourself. So when you look into the mirror, if you did, and whether that's literally or metaphorically, what do you see? Is it a comparison to others? Is it quite literally, you know, you see something that others don't see? Just so we maybe can tap into what might be going on in houses that might help if you get where I'm coming from.
100%. Yeah. So one of the, I suppose, components, you know, when you think about the case of anorexia, there's a term called body dysmorphia. So body dysmorphia is when someone has a sort of a very negative perception of their appearance. They're very much caught in this idea of, you know, they're unhappy with the way they look. And that feeling can cause them to almost go out of their way to find flaws, right? And now when I say flaws, I would say flaws in like inverted commas, flaws that might as well be unnoticeable to the naked eye of the observer. And this sort of nitpicking approach is coming along due to the thoughts and feelings underneath. And so so what can happen in the case of anorexia is someone, they very much cannot see their body clearly. They're not seeing themselves through an accurate lens. It's kind of like a broken lens in some case. So I always give the example of with anorexia, for example, if someone is beginning to lose weight, you know, they've lost a noticeable amount of weight, friends or family might communicate that or might voice their concerns. And the person with anorexia, and as I did in my case, they might deny that there's a problem. Partially because, number one, they see the eating disorder as a coping mechanism, but also number two, because when they look in the mirror, they don't see themselves as being any smaller than they were before. And that was definitely the case in my case. Like when I look back, like now as I'm recovered, when I look back at photos of myself from when I was at my lowest weight, I can see that I was terribly underweight, very low BMI. I think emaciated would be the medical term. But when I was in that moment, you know, literally when I looked in the mirror, I wasn't seeing that. You know, I wouldn't say I saw myself as being overweight, but I definitely saw myself as being a lot bigger than I actually was. So yes, there is that kind of flawed perception, and that can feed into this thing of, oh, well, I'm not seeing what everyone else is seeing, so it mustn't be true. So I have to keep going. I have to keep restricting. I have to keep losing weight. So 100%, a big part of the recovery is repairing that perception of your body image. You know, it's beginning to see yourself clearly. And then, like in my case, you know, becoming okay with the fact that you have to regain the weight for the sake of your health. And one thing I find particularly notable is, like, I was in counselling for a year in this recovery process, and how I looked at myself in the mirror, you know, at the start of that year, at the end, was night and day. You know, to be able to regain the weight and look in the mirror and be happy and not be judging yourself the way you were before. So yeah, absolutely, it's very much a distorted view that you have of oneself, 100%.
That was Conor Nolan there. And we wanted to do that interview, as I say, because there's a lot of pressure on people of all ages, but younger people too. And, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old people can be very body conscious. And in some, it can manifest itself into an eating disorder. And there are supports out there. So that full interview with Conor will be available a little later on. It'll be this evening, and it'll be available on our website in the listen back section as part of the Greg Hughes podcast series. Also, it'll populate on Spotify and iTunes as well, just in case it's of interest to you and you want to hear a little more. Reading an opinion piece, if you could call it that, I suppose you could actually, in the Irish Times, and it reads, "The body of evidence in our oral health or for our oral health having a direct and indirect impact on our overall health is growing steadily. Far from being just a vital component of a nice smile, scientific research increasingly demonstrates that the health of our teeth is linked to the development of a wide range of health conditions. Show me a patient's mouth and I'll be able to tell you a lot about that patient's health systemically, because we know there's links between dental disease and a lot of different diseases." I have the pleasure now of speaking to Dr. Gerard Rorty, who's principal dentist in Gwydor Dental. Good morning, Gerard. And is that an opinion that you subscribe to?
Good morning, Greg. Yes, very much so. Periodontal disease or gum disease is in a condition that's totally underestimated by Irish people. It has a major impact, and it contributes to Alzheimer's, it contributes to heart attacks, it contributes to stroke. It results in adverse pregnancy results, causes kidney disease, respiratory disease, rheumatoid arthritis. And it's something, you know, it's really, really true that when I look in someone's mouth, the state of their gums and the amount of periodontal disease used to be called pyorrhea. So it's basically inflammation of gums and a buildup of bacteria in the mouth. Very often then, you know, I look at the medical history that we've taken before the patient comes in, and there's a correlation. But unfortunately, it's a disease that people just don't realise, you know, how significant it is. And it's a disease that's becoming more and more important, because people are holding on to their teeth, which is fantastic, but they're holding on to their teeth very often in a very unhealthy fashion. So Irish people in particular have very, very high levels of periodontal disease. So the various research shows that about 80% of Irish people over 35 have periodontal disease. So 80% of Irish people are going around with billions of bacteria in their mouth that will contribute to them ultimately getting Alzheimer's, heart attacks, strokes, dementia. And they just don't realise it. It's a disease that's very easily dealt with, very easily brought under control. And if you contrast the figures somewhere like America, where there's much, much less periodontal disease, because the Americans are much better at oral hygiene in general and attending their hygienist in general. You know, we very often think of the dentist and the dentist looking after your teeth, which is very important. But the dentist is only one part of the package. Mm. Your hygienist is the other leg of the stool.
Can I ask, in a way, I suppose, well, I'll get to my second point in a moment. Do we know the relationship between the presence of periodontal disease and cardiovascular diseases, hypertension, diabetes, etc.? Like, which one follows the other, and why might... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there's really good published research showing the figures. I mean, you mentioned for a sake of our cardiovascular disease. So having periodontal disease increases the chance of you having a heart attack or stroke by one third. So let's take a step back. 80% of Irish people over 35 have periodontal disease. So 80% of Irish people are going around with a condition that's very easily controlled that will increase their chances of heart attack or stroke by one third. You know, the science is very simple. When you have periodontal disease, you have billions of bacteria around the roots of your teeth, and you're challenging your immune system continually to manage that infection. So there's not only the localized damage that it's doing around the bone structure around your teeth, which will cause the teeth to loosen and ultimately fall out, but it's the fact that those bacteria, every time you eat, are spreading through your bloodstream and challenging your immune system. People are familiar who've ever had a hip or a knee done, that the first thing that the orthopedic surgeon does is say to them, come back here with a letter from your dentist saying that you're dentally fit. And several times a week, I'll be presented with people and they'll give me that letter and I look at their mouth and I'll say, well, you've neglected your teeth to such an extent that you have such an extent of periodontal disease, you're not going to be able to get that hip done or not going to be able to get that knee done
for several years because
you're sailing about with an infection.
Right, so periodontal disease is more of a cause than a sign?
Periodontal disease causes, exactly.
Okay,
so,
right.
But it also reflects, in other words, it's a good correlation between people's overall health.
Mm.
People, it's a contributory factor, as I said, to dementia, to Alzheimer's disease, to cardiovascular disease, it makes diabetes worse, chronic kidney disease. And the annoying thing, the sad thing about it, it's so easily controlled.
Mm.
So easily controlled.
I presume,
controlled.
Too, you're also pulling resources. You're pulling defense resources from your body constantly walking around with an infection.
Exactly. Greg, that's a lovely way of putting it. So that's exactly what's happening. So your immune system is continually battling and dealing with this, what they call a low-grade inflammation, a low-grade infection in your mouth at all times. And you're challenging your immune system. And going back to the knee or a hip, if you've got a knee or a hip, first of all, you're getting a general anesthetic, you're going to get surgery done, and your immune system's been challenged, and you've got these bacteria who are sailing about in your bloodstream, and they're going to settle out in their knee or the hip. But they also do that throughout your bloodstream in general. Mm. So it's going back to the amount of infection. You know, what surprises me very often is people come into my surgery, and they're immaculately groomed, and they're incredibly turned out, and absolutely, the overall hygiene is absolutely incredible. And then you open your mouth, and you just think to yourself, well, that person would not be coming in here with a lot of muck sitting on their hands or on their face. And they don't actually realise, you know, the amount of infection that they have.
We're not making the connection, and I think this is why this conversation is important.
We're not making the connection, and the big difference is lack of education. So go back to America, where it's very standard. You see your hygienist twice a year. It's ingrained to American people, much, much less than in periodontal disease. We, as a people, just are not aware of that. And the interesting thing is, you know...
But, Jared, can I jump in there if you don't mind? And I don't want to drag this into a national political conversation either, but, you know... it even to get our teeth screened now in school along the guidance of what we're supposed to be getting done, we almost have a policy that favours extraction over cleanliness and care and oversight. That's inevitably going to influence then what happens further down the line. It's almost like a dynamo. I'm not sure, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Maybe you completely disagree with
Greg,
me. But
don't get me started, because you're absolutely right. So we're about, for example, to get a medical care contract on our practice in Gador. We'll have it in a month's time. In the contract, I can do unlimited extractions in Greg Hughes if you've got a medical card. So you come into me and you have a problem, I can say, Greg, no problem. I can take out as many teeth as you like and I get paid for that, which is fantastic. I'm limited in terms of what I can do for you for prevention. I can only give you one scale and polish per year. You need a minimum of two. I'm only allowed to give you two fillings per year. We have incredibly hard-working dentists in the HSE, but they're massively under-resourced. We simply don't have the numbers. So we only do a screening for children in sixth class. Those children need to be seen as soon as the first permanent molars erupt to have them what's known as fissure sealed. That's a plastic coating put over their teeth that reduces the amount of decay by 80%.
Wow.
So anybody listening on the show this morning, if you have a child 7 or 8 years of age, get to your dentist, and your hygienist or dentist will put a fissure sealant over them, because the HSE would love to be able to do that, but they simply don't have the dentist, they don't have the hygienist, and you're totally right. Everything is geared towards rendering our population what is known as edentulous, having no teeth.
Yeah.
So, Greg, you come into our dental practice, you have a medical card. Unfortunately, the policy of the Department of Health is I will get very well looked after to take out all your teeth and make you a set of dentures.
Mm.
I will not get paid to look after your teeth. And it's so sad, because this is, you know, go back to the systemic implications of this. As you know, it's a penny that would be spent very, very wisely, because the impact in reducing, you know, just think in coronary care, the fact, you know, just by the government's paying for that little bit more for preventive and maintenance of people's periodontal disease. But unfortunately, it's something that the Department of Health, in terms of dentistry, have just made a decision that the system...
Well, I have a critical question to ask you in relation to this, because sometimes from the HSE, as good as it can be at times, there's a reluctance to accept medical evidence because of the tsunami that might follow. And I can think of another a few conditions that are real and affect an awful lot of people and are kind of poo-pooed by the HSC. Does the HSC recognise the fact that periodontal disease can lead to some of the other conditions, such as cardiovascular diseases, etc., that we're talking of? Do they accept that is the case? Well, and then go ahead.
Yeah, very much so. They do, very much so. So the HSE, if you look at any of the HSE publications, they have excellent publications on oral hygiene, excellent publications on periodontal disease, excellent publications on gingivitis. So gingivitis is inflammation of the gums that leads on to periodontal disease. So the HSE, you know, the dental people in the HSE, I can think, I know some of them, and they're absolutely fantastic. So no, you're talking about world-class people in terms of their medical knowledge. It goes back to politics. It's very simple that we're dealing with a political situation that goes back generations. Where generations ago, you know, you go back to the 1950s, we're dealing with, in oral health, politicians had a system whereby we were going to pay to have your teeth taken out, give you a set of dentures. The supreme irony of that, Greg, and this is the total irony, although you have an absolutely desperate quality of life wearing dentures as opposed to having your own teeth, you don't get periodontal disease when you have dentures, because you've lost your teeth. So the ironic thing is the political thinking going back to the 1950s worked. The reality now is, thank God, people are holding on to their teeth.
Okay.
So we've changed population.
But we need to look out for bad breath that sticks about your gums changing, if they swell, if they bleed. Does it bleed at any time or while brushing, Jared? And also receding gums.
Those are some of the markers, though, Greg. The interesting thing is those are only a very small percentage of people will have bad breath. Only a very small percentage of them will have bleeding gums.
And there's crossovers
over
here, Jared.
We'll pick it up on examination.
Yeah, I think there's crossovers of what it could be. And the real best way, and I must move on, Jared, but I really appreciate your time, get your blooming teeth checked. That's the...
Well, the big... Yeah, but I've realised as well that you're entitled under the medical card to have examination, scale and polish once a year, under PRSI to have examination, scale and polish once a year. So it's really just a matter of getting to the mindset mm-hmm. of getting in mm-hmm. and then attending your hygienist the second time during right. the year.
Jared, listen, lovely talking to you. Dr. Jared Rorty, Principal Dentist in Guido Dental. And there's a number of... now, dentists is medicine, don't get me wrong, and there's very clear indicators, as you've heard there from Jared. But it's interesting, those who work in certain services, like hairdressers, for an example, and I've spoken to many hairdressers, not just the one, and often they will be able to spot an issue with a client because of the condition of the hair. Not that I or you could if you're not working in that area, but in terms of, you know, anxieties or stresses, and not just say, for instance, alopecia or something like that, but I was speaking to hair care experts, and it's just the condition of the hair can be an indicator as well. Maybe if you work in hair, you'll be able to confirm that for me. But it goes to show, you know, you look after your hair, you look after your teeth, and they can be indicators of perhaps maybe the early signs of something as well. That is completely new on me. I have never heard of this connection between periodontal disease, cardiovascular disease, etc. And I've been doing this job for quite some time. So every day, as they say, is a learning day. Now, our suite of podcasts for you growing all of the time, and it's about you choosing when you want to listen to things. We love having you listening live. 80-odd thousand of you do so every day. In fact, more than that, which is fantastic. But we also have lots of podcasts, sport podcasts, DL Debate, The Score, the podcast of this show, The Greg Hughes Podcast, and in the world of business, the man at the helm, Chris Ashmore, presenter of our Business Matters podcast. And all those podcasts available for you in the listen back section on our website. Right, let's get some news. Enterprise Week.
Yes, a big week, more than 20 events going on all over the county, lots of different speakers, a great way to find out, you know, there's things about AI is obviously going to be big this year. There's a lot of networking. Highland Radio is actually broadcasting live from the Made in Donegal Business Showcase. That's next Friday.
That's John Breston around the northwest down there, I think.
I think Noel Cunningham's involved as well. And it's, yes, John's show will be there. And now this is particularly good. It celebrates the county's food and craft industries. And it really is a great day out. And it's just amazing what's going on throughout the county. So Enterprise Week, if you go to the local enterprise office website, you'll find all the details there. And it begins next Monday, runs through till Friday.
Our grid is mostly responsible for our electricity infrastructure. They've issued a warning.
Yes, they've issued a warning today of what they say is a potentially challenging situation in relation to meeting electricity demand over the next few years because of the big increase in data centres, also new homes, more people with electric cars, transport.
Data centres, no. 25% of our electricity goes to data centres. Yeah. I'm not buying it's got anything to do with us. Sorry, Air Grid, although Air Grid owes me €600. Yeah. But anyway, it's, you know, I mean, yes, of course, electric cars, bish, bash, bomb, new connect. That maybe in regional areas that's an issue. But the bottom line is, you know, we've had our power effectively to the general population reduced by 25% because of data centres.
Now, they're saying our demand for electricity is forecast to grow by 19% between now and 2034. So obviously that means we need to have more power generation. And they have also revealed that the state currently, Greg, imports around 12% of its electricity needs from the UK, which is not an insubstantial amount. So we're going to hear a lot more about this in the next few years. And of course, it's going to accelerate the demand for alternative green energy.
Yeah, but wait till you hear this. We're jamming an interconnector into Spain. The majority of their power is generated by solar. And we'll say, no, look, we've reached our targets. Look at the amount of green energy we're creating when we're actually importing it from Spain. Anyway, we'll come back to news, but I want to make sure that we give the podcast a good run. So if we have time at the end, we'll jump back into the news. On this week's Business Matters programme, Chris, what is the topic up for discussion?
Well, two topics this week, Greg. I've been looking at the International Women's Day is taking place next week. I've been speaking to Sally Murphy, who's president of the Donegal Business Women in Business Network. They have an event on next week in the Green Hotel in Burt. It's next Friday. It's called Built on Belief, which is the theme of Enterprise Week, Women Building Businesses in Donegal. They have a number of speakers there. And it all ties in with networking. And just here in Donegal, there's been a huge growth in membership of the Donegal Business Women in Business Network. And I think we have a clip here from Sally Murphy, its president.
Have a bit of faith. Of course we do.
We are doing what we love to do, which is showcasing and celebrating Donegal women and giving them a stage to share the story of their business. And it's going to be a look at the highs and lows and a kind of behind the scenes perspective on what it really takes to build a business. And we will follow that up with networking, an opportunity for our visitors and our guests to connect with one another, to consider where they're at on their own business or entrepreneurial journey.
And your second guest, Chris?
Yes, it's Geraldine Byrne, who's the New Frontiers Programme Manager at ATU Letterkenny. And this is a programme, it's the first phase is starting up in April. So if you've got a good business idea, this can be the starting point and a platform to see if it has potential. And we can hear from Geraldine here.
If you have a germ of an idea and you really don't know where to start, the programme will go through various, I suppose, what you want to call topics, including, market research, defining what your value proposition is. Like, have you got something that people actually want to buy? And somebody mentioned to me recently, when I loved it, was a quote, is there a market in the gap? So rather than saying, is there a gap in the market, is the gap in the market big enough to make money for you as an entrepreneur or founder?
Okay, so a very interesting podcast coming up, and it's going to be available for you to listen in its entirety on our website very soon and on Spotify. It has its own Spotify channel, Business Matters, and on iTunes as well. Chris, it's also broadcast after 6 on Sunday, isn't it?
Yes, great.
And if anyone wishes to get in contact with you,
it's businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Chat to you next week. And that's where we leave it on the show for today. Have a wonderful Thursday, everybody.